Smith in the City by P.G. Wodehouse, dramatized by Marcy Kahan. Episode 1, First Steps in a Business Career.
This story of the city and the world of commerce begins deceptively at a country railway station where our hero, the redoubtable Smith, the P is entirely silent, is meeting his old school friend, the gifted cricketer Mike Jackson.
Comrade Jackson, hop in.
Hello, Smith.
Ah, you brought your cricket bat.
That's why I'm here.
You promised me a week of cricket.
That depends entirely on my father.
I don't follow. Father is a man of vast but volatile brain. He won't countenance more than one hobby at a time. When I left the house this morning, he was all for cricket. By the time we get to the ground, he may have taken up the territorial army. Don't be surprised if you find the wicket being dug up into trenches.
Right.
You're still cricket mad, Comrade Jackson.
Rather.
I suppose you're going to the varsity?
Cambridge.
King's.
You are, of course.
Dashed if I know what's going to happen to me. It's my father, Comrade Jackson. I am practically a human three shies a penny ball.
Hey?
My father is poising me lightly in his hand, preparatory to flinging me at one of the milky cocos of life.
So he doesn't rate Cambridge?
He rates everything. The least thing fills him with a new vision of my future. Last week, we were out shooting, and he said the life of the gentleman farmer was the most manly and independent on earth.
Farming? You?
Oh, he chucked that idea when he realized I'd be hard-pressed to distinguish a threshing machine from a mangle wurzel. He's now keen on me and commerce.
Commerce?
Blighter of the name of Bickersdyke is coming down at the end of the week. He's father's bank manager, a big cheese in the city, raked in a load of doubloons, probably dishonestly, a captain of industry, about to stand for Parliament.
And your father hopes?
He hopes that I shall imitate the Bickersdyke. Don't look so gloomy. He's bound to change his mind again. And here we are, the old homestead. Hear that, Comrade Jackson?
Best sound in the world, Smith.
Cricket is still topping the bill. Come along, your room is next to mine. That way, while brooding on life in the still hours of the night, if I hit on any great truth, I shall pop in and discuss it with you.
It was the final hour of what had been, for our hero Mike, a splendid week of cricket. And in that final hour, Mike found himself batting in what was to date the best innings of his life. The bowling held no terrors for him. His fellow batsmen had not been so lucky. They came and went with such rapidity that it seemed hardly worthwhile their trouble to come in at all. By 5 o'clock, with stumps due to be drawn at 6, it was obvious that Mike's team couldn't hope to win. Then Mr. Smith sent in Bagley, a dried-up little man who put a much-bound bat stolidly in front of every ball he received. At 6:05, with 98 runs to his credit, Mike looked set to score a century and win the match. Mike left the first ball alone. And the second. They were too wide of the off-stump to be hit at safely. Then he felt a thrill as the third ball left the bowler's hand, a long hop. He faced square to pull it. The match was over. Mike had been clean bowled by a long hop. Smith was the first to commiserate.
We thought you were heading for triumph, Comrade Jackson. Unassailable was the word among the deck chairs.
Sorry, Smith. Some silly idiot walked across the screen just as the ball was bowled.
What? Where? Who was the fool who walked behind the bowler's arm?
Here he comes now.
A short, stout man in a straw hat was walking towards them. He had a hard, thin-lipped mouth. Behind a pair of gold spectacles were two pale, slightly protruding eyes, which, like his mouth, looked hard.
Hello there. You lost the game, I suppose.
All thanks to you. You walked across the screen, put Comrade Jackson off, and made him get bowled.
The screen?
That curious white object.
It is not simply ornamental. There's a sort of a rough idea of giving the batsman a chance of seeing the ball.
So it's a tremendous help when people like you come charging across it just as a bowler bowls.
Now, really, you can't expect me...
I've been batting all afternoon. You'll have to excuse me.
Ah! What a rude young cub.
Rude young cub? My dear comrade, whatever your name may be...
Bickersdyke.
Ah, Bickersdyke. The merchant prince of commerce.
That explains your ignorance.
Now, see here.
Please, comrade, no need to apologize. In your relentless pursuit of doubloons, you have had little time to become acquainted with the rituals of high summer, the sacred codes of behavior governing perambulation and bowling screens.
Who are you?
I am Smith. The P is silent. As should you be, comrade. Utterly silent after your frightful blunder.
Failing to win the match was bad enough, but when Mike got home, there was worse to follow. His father had requested a meeting in his study. When Mike entered, Mr. Jackson was kicking at the wastepaper basket, an infallible sign of mental unrest.
Come in, Mike. Close the door. How did you get on?
Topping. Only once out under double figures, and then I was run out.
Oh.
Today, I made 98 on a beast of a wicket, and only got out because some silly goat...
Look here, Mike. We've always understood each other.
Of course we have, Father.
I know how keen you are to go to Cambridge. I'm as anxious as you are to see you get your blue.
Has something happened?
I've lost a very large sum of money. We shall have to economize in every way. I shall let this house and take a smaller one. And you, I'm afraid, will have to start earning your living.
I see.
If there was any possible way...
It's all right. I don't mind a bit. It's awfully rough on you losing all that.
You're a sportsman. I've managed to acquire a position for you at the New Asiatic Bank.
Did you say bank, Father?
They'll pay you £4.10 a month. Not a huge amount, but every shilling helps.
Of course.
You're to start next week. That'll give you time to find digs and get settled in London.
London?
London. Mike arrived at Paddington with mixed feelings of gloom and excitement. The gloom was in the larger quantity, but the excitement was there too. This was the first time in his life Mike had been entirely dependent on himself. He had crossed the Rubicon.
Excuse me, those are my cases up there.
Hey, Cav.
Thanks.
As for London, it did not care whether he was glad to be there or sorry.
Taxi. Victoria, please.
Mike had settled on Dulwich as the spot to get lodgings. As he wandered up the passage that leads from Dulwich Station in the direction of the college, he came into Acacia Road. There is something about Acacia Road which positively signals furnished apartments. A female person opened the door. In appearance, she resembled a pantomime dame. She regarded Mike with the expression of an unintelligent fried egg.
Was there anything?
Your sign. Bed sitting room to let.
Who are stairs?
Which Mike interpreted to mean, would he walk upstairs? Which he did. The stairs were dark. The hallway smelled of soap.
It's a nice room.
This was a black lie. It was not a nice room. It had never been a nice room. But it looked cheap. That was the great thing. Nobody could have the assurance to charge much for a room like that. A landlady with a conscience might even have gone to the length of paying people some small sum by way of compensation for sleeping in it.
How much?
It's a nice room, as you can see. A very nice room. I could do it for you at 7 and 6 pence a week. Lights included. Coal is extra. 6 pence a scuttle.
The landlady indicated to Mike that these were special rates. If the Shah of Persia or Mr. Carnegie ever applied for a night's rest, they would sigh in vain for such easy terms.
That will be fine.
You'll be wanting breakfast, bacon, eggs and that, I suppose?
I suppose so.
That'll be extra. And dinner, a chop or a nice steak?
I suppose so.
That'll be extra. Now, you better give me 1 week's rent in advance.
Yes, of course.
The landlady presented Mike with a grubby receipt and an enormous latchkey. The sales was at an end. Mike sat on the bed. It sagged. He missed his family, and even more, he missed Smith. Then he made the mistake of looking out the window. There was a view of the college cricket ground. Summers would come and go, matches would be played, but Mike's life was done. He was a jolly good bat at school, they'd say. He went into the city or something. That's assuming he wasn't forgotten entirely. Feeling thoroughly cold, miserable and forsaken, Mike went to bed. Next morning, the city received Mike with aloofness. He was permitted to alight at St. Paul's and make his way up Queen Victoria Street, following the human stream till he reached the Mansion House, and eventually found himself at the massive building of the New Asiatic Bank. There was the bank, and here was Mike. How had he better set about breaking it to the authorities that he had positively arrived and was ready to start earning his £4.10 per mensem? He intercepted a benevolent-looking man at the entrance.
Could you tell me what I'm supposed to do?
What do I have to do?
I've just joined the bank.
Ah. Well, I think perhaps your best plan would be to see the manager. If you permit me, I will show you the way.
Awfully good of you.
It feels strange, perhaps, at first, Mr.
Jackson.
Mr. Jackson. My name is Waller. I've been in the city some time, but I can still recall my first day. But one shakes down. One shakes down. Here is the manager's room. If you go in, he will tell you what to do.
The manager was talking on the telephone with his back to the door.
Certainly not. Absolutely not.
The manager's voice and head and torso looked familiar. He turned to face Mike. Bickersdyke. The bowling screen pedestrian. It was obvious from Bickersdyke's look that he recognised Mike.
Well?
Now, Smith, in Mike's place, would have relaxed the tension with some remark on the weather or the state of the crops. All Mike could say was,
I've come.
He sounded sinister. He felt that even as he said it. It was the sort of thing Mephistopheles would have said to Faust.
I'm Jackson. I think I was meant to start this morning.
You have joined the staff.
Mike rather liked this way of putting it. He could see the bank's directors being reassured by the chairman. I'm happy to say, gentlemen, that our profits for the year are 3,006, 2 and 2 pence halfpenny, and that we have finally succeeded in inducing Mr. Mike Jackson to join the staff. Cheers, applause, rejoicing all round.
Yes, Mr. Bickersdyke, I have joined the staff.
You are about to discover, Mr. Jackson, that commercial life is more demanding and a good deal more serious than a country cricket match.
Mike wondered whether he was expected to reply to this sour observation, but Bickersdyke paid no further attention to him. He pressed a bell which summoned a messenger. A shock-headed youth appeared. He had paper cuff protectors round his wrists.
Bannister.
Sir?
This is Mr. Jackson. You'll take your place in the postage department under Mr. Rossiter. You will go into cash under Mr. Waller. Kindly show him what to do.
And that was that. The postage department. Mr. Rossiter. Mike's fate was sealed. On the other side of the door, the shock-headed one became communicative.
Oh, I pity you going into the postage. What's Rossiter like?
Fussy little brute. Won't leave you alone. Always trying to catch you on the hop. That's him. Best of luck. You'll need it.
Mr. Rossiter was a little man with short, bristly hair, rather like a water vole, Mike thought, and a harried manner.
Ah, the new man. Where's the other one?
Sorry?
They promised me 2 new men. We are short-handed in this department. But
there's only me.
Oh, well, come along. No time to waste. I shall train you myself.
Mike's duties in the postage department were not intricate, but unfortunately Mr. Rossiter took them very seriously.
You must enter all the letters that go out in this ledger here.
Yes, I see.
And stamp them. You must be sure to stamp each letter.
Yes, of course.
Now, at suitable intervals throughout the day, you must take them to the post office at the end of the street.
Yes. How long must I stay here?
What was that?
What are my hours?
You must be here by 10 each morning. You may leave at 5.
Holidays?
Should you prove satisfactory, you'll be given 10 days' holiday after a year's service. Well, here are several letters to be entered. To work, to work.
Yes.
There are some people who take naturally to a life of commerce. Mike was not one of these. The monotony appalled him. He was not old enough to know what a narcotic is habit, and that one can become interested in the most unpromising jobs. Mike sat hunched over his ledger, trying not to think of the hours and days and months and years that he must endure in this stuffy place. After several hours of this misery, he looked up to find Mr. Waller staring at him.
I wonder if you would care to come out to lunch. I thought perhaps being unused to the city, you might have some difficulty in finding your way about.
That's awfully good of you.
Waller led the way down obscure streets and alleys till they came to a chop house. Here one could have the doubtful pleasure of seeing one's chop in its various stages of evolution.
Now, let me see. I had tomato ragu on Thursday. Friday was cod, peas and fried potatoes. So I think today will have to be the Windsor soup and a nice lamb chop.
Lunch for city workers is not a trivial affair, but rather an oasis in the desert of ink and ledgers. Conversation in city offices revolves in the morning round what one is going to have for lunch, and in the afternoon summarises what one has had for lunch.
Mr. Waller, What sort of a man is Bickersdyke?
Oh, a very able man. A great fellow for getting on. They say he is to be the unionist candidate for Kenningford. A great worker. Perhaps not generally popular in the office. A little inclined, perhaps, to be hard on mistakes.
I've met him before. He's a blighter.
Mr. Waller made no comment on Mike's verdict. When the hands of the chop house clock reached a quarter to two, they returned to the bank and their respective departments. There was a pile of new letters on Mike's desk. The addresses began to fascinate him.
Hallam Court, Gloucestershire. Glebe House, Shropshire.
Some of the addresses he was entering in the ledger were directed to people living in the country. One to a house which he knew quite well near his home. This conjured up the Silver Severn gleaming in the distance through the trees. About now, if he were not in this dismal place, he would be lying in the garden with a book, or wandering down to the river to boat or bathe.
J.B. Garside, Esquire, Worcestershire. And how are you today, Mr. Garside? Are you enjoying your house in Worcestershire? Does it have a lake? Or perhaps a pond? What about a rose garden? Do you like roses?
If he is a man of sensibility, Comrade Jackson, he is sure to adore roses, and indeed every fragile flower in his garden.
Mike turned. A long, lean figure was standing at his side.
Smith! Smith, is it really you?
I fear it is really I. Commerce has claimed me for her own.
You mean?
Comrade of old, I too have joined this blighted institution.
Mr. Jackson.
Who is here?
Mr. Jackson, I must ask you to come in from your lunch at the proper time. It was fully 7 minutes to 2 when you returned, and not so...
That little more, and how much is it?
Well, who are you?
Oh, I shall be delighted, Comrade...
Rossiter.
Comrade Rossiter, I shall be delighted to furnish you with particulars of my family history. Soon after the Norman Conquest, a certain Sieur de Smith, the P that has always been silent, grew tired of work, family failing, alas, and settled down in this country to live peacefully for the remainder of his life on what he could extract from the local peasantry. Now, he was the founder of the family, which ultimately culminated in me. Passing on...
What are you doing here?
I am now a member of the staff of this bank. Its interests are my interests. Smith, the individual, ceases to exist, and there springs into being Smith, the cog in the wheel of the new Asiatic bank. Smith, the link in the bank's chain. Smith, the worker. I tell you, Comrade Rossiter, that you have got hold of a good man. You and I together, not forgetting Comrade Jackson here, will toil early and late till we boost up this postage department into a shining model of what a postage department should be. Excursion trains will be run from distant shires to see this postage department. American tourists to London will do it before going on to the Tower. Now, you must excuse me. Much as I have enjoyed this little chat, our trade rivals are getting ahead. The whisper goes round. Rossiter and Smith are talking. Not working. Other firms conspire to pinch our business. Look here, there are letters to be entered. Vital epistles to be stamped. Let me work.
Rossiter retreated, dazed and exhausted. Smith concentrated on his ledger, the picture of the model bank clerk. Then he flung down his pen.
A commercial crisis, Comrade Jackson, has passed. The bank ceases to totter. Shall we chat a while?
I rather think I'll nip down to the post office. You couldn't come too.
Excellent. Let us trickle towards the post office. I will leave my hat and gloves as a guarantee of good faith. Thus, they will sink back, swooning with relief. They will say, no, he has not gone permanently. Smith will return. When the fields are white with daisies, he'll return.
Mm-hmm.
haven't told me what on earth you're doing here, Smith. I thought you were going to the varsity. Your pater hasn't lost his money, has he?
No. There is still a tolerable supply of doubloons in the old oak chest. Ah, so you put the little chaps in there, do you? I fancy we are both born men of commerce. But I shall never have time to relate my painful story during our walk back. Let us drift aside into this tea shop.
When last I saw you, two porridges, please. You may remember that my father, inflamed with the idea of commerce, had invited Comrade Bickersdyke to the ancestral home. Things turned out rather unfortunately. Blighter walked across the bowling screen. Quite so. After you left, things deteriorated further. He expressed a wish that he had me under him in his bank, where he would knock some of the nonsense out of me. Strong stuff. Well, very painful, Comrade Jackson. Thank you. At the time, it reduced my delicately vibrating ganglions to a mere frazzle. Later that evening, my pater opined that he thought I might plunge into a career of commerce. Comrade B offered to take me on at once. Lighter. So, here I am. We're in for a pretty rotten time of it in this bally bank. Bickersdyke knew me at once.
Indeed.
If he's got his knife out, he can make it jolly warm for us.
True, but I propose to make things moderately unrestful for him.
But you can't. I mean, it isn't like school. How can you rag a man who's sitting all day in a room of his own whilst you're sweating away at a desk at the other end of the building?
Well put, Comrade J. But I happen to have a plan.
What sort of plan?
A twofold strategy. I do not propose to do a thing in the bank except work. I shall be flawless. I shall bound to Comrade Rossiter's bidding like a highly trained performing dog. But outside the bank,
yes,
when I have staggered away, dazed with toil, then I shall devote my attention to the education of Comrade Bickersdyke.
But dash it all, how can you? He'll go off home. Or to his club.
There, Comrade J, you've hit the bullseye, rung the bell, and gathered in the cigar or coconut, according to choice. Bickersdyke will go off to his club, and so shall I.
How do you mean?
My father, that man of warm, impulsive character, has sent me into the city to do the hard-working bank clerk act, but he has not reduced my allowance. Moreover, while I was still at school, he put my name up for his clubs, including the senior conservative.
And you believe that Bickersdyke...
I have gleaned from casual chit-chat with my father that Comrade Bickersdyke also infests the senior conservative.
So you intend...
I intend to mix freely with Comrade B at the senior CC. I shall be his constant companion. I shall, in short, haunt the man.
Gosh.
Now, it might be as well, perhaps, to resume our commercial duties. Your devotion to porridge, Comrade Jackson, has led to our spending 25 minutes in this hostelry.
Great Scott! There'll be a row.
Some slight temporary breeze, perhaps?
What does it mean? What does it mean? Where have you been? Where have you been?
Poetry. Excellent.
Where have you been? I cannot have this. It is preposterous. Suppose Mr. Bickersdyke had come round. I should not have known what to say to him.
Never an easy man to chat with, Comrade Bickersdyke.
Mr. Smith, Mr. Jackson, you must thoroughly understand that you are expected to remain in your places during business hours.
That makes it a little hard for Comrade Jackson to post letters, does it not?
Have you been posting letters?
Yes. You have wronged us, Comrade Rossiter. You jumped rashly to the conclusion that we were merely gadding about in pursuit of pleasure. Error.
You had no business to leave your desk, Mr. Smith. Jackson is on the posting desk.
Very true. It was only because it was the first day. Comrade J is not used to the stir and bustle of the city. His nerve failed him. I volunteered to back him up. We won safely through. Every letter posted.
Every single one.
That need not have taken you half an hour.
True again. But the nerve strain had left us shaken. A breathing space, a little porridge, and here we are, fit for work once more.
Mr. Smith, Mr. Jackson.
Ah, Comrade Bickersdyke.
You do not seem very busy, gentlemen.
Apparently, no. In reality, yes. Mr. Rossiter and I were just scheming out a line of work for me. As for Comrade Jackson, he has just returned from a vital expedition to the posting box.
Well, get on with your work. We do not encourage idling in this bank.
Assuredly not. I am a worker. A bee, not a drone. A Lusitania, not a limpet.
Mr. Rossiter.
Mr. Bickerstaff.
Do you find Mr. Jackson and Mr. Smith's work satisfactory, Mr. Rossiter?
Oh, I... Quiet, Mr. Bickersdyke. I think they will very soon pick things up. Of course, they need training.
Training, precisely. I have a special interest in seeing these two knuckle down to the discipline of commerce.
Oh, Mr. Bickersdyke?
Yes?
Father sends his kind regards to you. Thank you, Comrade Rossiter. An uncommonly cheery, companionable fellow, isn't he?
Mr. Smith, I beseech you...
Enough chit-chat. An end to persiflage. My pen is to hand, my brain is awhir. Let our rivals quake.
Mike felt as if he had been sitting at his desk for weeks when the hour for departure came. Smith accompanied him down to the post office for the last delivery of the day.
By the way, Comrade Jackson, where are you digging?
I found a bedsit. Acacia Road, Dulwich.
Wherever that is, you must clear out at once.
But Smith, I was lucky to find it.
It is imperative in this crisis that we should be together. I have acquired a snug little flat in Clement's Inn.
But Smith...
There is a spare bedroom. It shall be yours.
My dear chap, I can't sponge on you.
You pain me, Comrade Jackson. We are businessmen, hard-headed young bankers. I offer you the post of confidential secretary and advisor to me in exchange for a comfortable home.
Confidential secretary?
You will be required to refuse all invitations to dinner from crowned heads and to listen attentively to my views on life.
But Smith...
Now, let's hail yon taximeter cab and desire the stern-faced aristocrat on the box to drive us to... Where did you say you were suspended?
Dulwich.
We shall collect your things in a bag, have the rest off by train, come back in the taxi, and go and bite a chop at the Carlton.
If you insist.
I do. This is a momentous day in our careers, Comrade Jay. I intend to get our own back on the Bickersdyke, and in the process, Comrade Jay.
Yes, Smith?
You and I shall have a tolerable deal of fun.
In episode 1 of Smith in the City by P.G. Woodhouse, dramatized by Marcy Cahan, Woodhouse was played by Simon Williams. Smith was Nick Caldicott and Mike Inam Mirza. Mr. Bickersdyke and the Dulwich landlady were played by Stephen Critchlow, and Mike's father and Mr. Rossiter by Chris Pavlo. Mr. Waller was played by Jonathan Taffler and Bannister by Robert Lonsdale. Original music was by Clive Swift. Smith in the City was directed by Abigail LaFlamme.